Assalamu alaikum students. On behalf of the Ministry of Science and Technology, Virtual University and Mubashir Humayun, I welcome you to another lecture of Financial Management. Today we will be talking about capital rationing. We are continuing our discussion on capital budgeting and we are going to talk about the practical side of capital budgeting, which draws our attention to the problem of allocating your money amongst different possible investments or projects where the amount of money that you have is limited. So, jaise ke companies ko apna capital or sarmaya ration karna padta hai, soch samajh ke, فرق اپرچونٹیز کے درمیان فرق پروجیکٹس کے درمیان ویسے ہی ممالک بھی ریشننگ کرتے ہیں بہت سے ملک فوڈ کی ریشننگ کرتے ہیں فوڈ آئٹمز انکلوڈنگ میٹ رائس اینڈ بیسک فوڈ آئٹمز آر آفن ٹائمز ریشنڈ اینڈ کیپیٹل ریشننگ پرووائڈز اے پریکٹیکل بیسس ٹو کیپیٹل بجٹنگ کیونکہ عملاً کیپیٹل بجٹنگ کے فیصلے جو ہیں وہ ایک محدود بجٹ کے اندر ہو رہے ہوتے ہیں کمپنی کی وسائل جو ہیں وہ محدود ہوتے ہیں دی فائنینشیل ریسورسز آف اے کمپنی آر لمیٹڈ دی ہیومن ریسورسز دی اسٹافنگ اینڈ مین پاور آف اے کمپنی از آلسو لمیٹڈ سو وی آر ٹاکنگ اباؤٹ کیپیٹل ریشننگ اینڈ ان دا کانٹیکسٹ آف کیپیٹل بجٹنگ ہم نے یہاں پہ ریئل ایسٹس investments کے بارے میں بات کرنی ہے we are going to look at real assets again as I mentioned earlier real assets have cash flows attached to them we can discount those future cash flows to the present and calculate the net present value this net present value if it is greater than zero and if the company invests in such a project will add to the value of the company. So when a company invests in a project that has a positive net present value, it will bring in value to the company. And the value of the company will go up, and because of this, the wealth of the shareholders and owners of the company will also go up. And we will fulfill and meet our objective in financial management. We have talked about already how to estimate these net after-tax cash flows. Our starting point, just to refresh your memory, is the net operating income from the pro forma or forecasted profit and loss statement. Added to that, we have to include the depreciation because that is a non-cash and in that sense an artificial expense. We need to add any tax savings associated with increases in depreciation. We need to include any tax that might have to be paid on the sale of an old equipment which is being replaced because you might be selling it at a price that is higher than the book value. And that capital gain is taxable. And kindly refer to your financial accounting text to understand or to refresh your memory regarding what I'm talking about here. Finally, we need to include in our formula for calculating the net after-tax cash flows, incidental cash flows such as sunken costs. They, in fact, need to be avoided from this formula because these costs have already been incurred and they have no direct connection with the investment in the project. But there are other costs such as externalities and opportunity costs that do have to be included in the formula for the net cash flows after tax. So, just to remind you about the importance of making sure that your forecast of the cash flows is correct. We have spoken already about the important criteria. Even when we're talking about capital rationing, the criteria that we will be using to decide whether to invest in a project or not to invest are the same. Our most important criteria will be the net present value, and our second most important criteria will be the internal rate of return. There is a new criteria that we will take a look at in capital rationing, and that is the percent budget utilization. In other words, what percentage of the total money that you have available to invest are you mobilizing? It's important to mobilize as much of the money as possible in projects that are earning a rate of return that is higher than the risk-free rate of return, because you want to maximize the return that you can get on the portfolio of your projects. Already we have spoken about certain special situations which cause complexities in calculating the IRR and the net present value. We've discussed the cases of multiple IRR. Multiple IRR arises when there is more than one sign change in the cash flow diagram. That means that there is more than one time that you find a change in the direction of the arrows in the cash flow diagram. By a change in the direction, I mean that in adjacent periods in time, you find the arrow switching direction either from the downward position to the upward position or vice versa. If this happens more than once on a cash flow diagram, then you can expect multiple answers for the IRR. And the solution is to avoid using the NPV equation to calculate IRR, because both of those values that you get will be incorrect. You need to use a different approach, and that approach is called modified IRR or MIRR. And in that, you need to take one step back and to separate the cash inflows and the cash outflows at every period in time. So rather than looking at the net cash flows for a particular year, you need to look at the cash inflows and outflows separately. What you do then is to bring all of the cash inflows to the future by compounding them to the termination date of the project, where the life of the project will end, and you lump all of the cash outflows and you bring them back in time through discounting to the present value. You do this discounting and compounding using a discount rate or a required rate of return, which you should pick as the minimal rate of return or the risk-free rate of return. And I suggest that you can pick 10% as a representative amount for this country. Now, the MIRR then is that discount rate that will equate the future value of the cash inflows to the present value of the cash outflows once the future value of the cash inflows has been discounted to the present. We've gone over this formula, so I won't spend any more time explaining the concept. We have also gone over the special cases of comparing projects that have different lifespans. Remember that you can't compare a project that has a life of 2 years to another project that has a life of 6 years. Why? Because the NPVs of these projects are not entirely comparable. One project has a very short lifespan of 2 years, and the other one has a long or a longer lifespan of 6 years. So you have two approaches. to solve this problem. One of them is the common life approach, in which you transform both of these cash flow diagrams to a common lifespan. In the case of a project with a lifespan of 2 years and another project with a lifespan of 6 years, the common lifespan is 6 years. So you can transform the cash flow diagram for both of these projects to a 6-year time horizon. In the case of the project with the 2-year life, you will replicate its cash flow pattern 3 times exactly so that it fits in evenly in the 6-year cycle. You can then calculate the NPVs of both projects over this new time horizon, this common life. And whichever project has the higher NPV is the project that you should pick, because that is the better project. Similarly, you can use the effective annual annuity method, and that is simply multiplying the simple value of the NPV that you calculated at the beginning for these projects and multiplying that value by the EAA factor. And that factor is 1 plus I raised to the power n divided by 1 plus I raised to the power n minus 1. Here, I represents the required rate of return, and n represents the life of the project. Once you have calculated the effective annual annuity for each project, then you can compare what this annual annuity is going to be for each project, and whichever project offers the highest annual annuity is the best project. Remember that the concept over here was to back calculate the annuity stream that would give you the net present value that you have calculated. And then it is fair to compare the annuity value of one project to another. Why? Because it is over the same duration in time, which is a span of 1 year. So we've spoken about and gone through some examples concerning these special cases of IRR and NPV. And now we're going to go into capital rationing and see how the context of the problem changes because of a constraint on the budget. Remember, as I mentioned earlier, that up till this point we have been talking about an ideal case where there was no constraint on the budget. But practically speaking, money is in short supply, and there is only so much money that a person or a company has to spend or to invest in different projects. So we need to figure out how we should change our analysis in order to take into account the limited supply of resources like money and so on. Now, the first thing that we need to go over is who is responsible for capital rationing. In a company, generally, the investment decision-making is divided up based on the size of the investment and the criticality or the urgency of the investment. Investments that are critical to the business operations or investments that are required by law are known as mandatory investments. And you will find very senior level management and the chief executive officer taking decisions related to the capital rationing and capital budgeting for these investments. On the other hand, smaller projects, which are not as significant, are called discretionary investments. And the authority for releasing funds and doing the capital budgeting analysis for this can be delegated to relatively junior management or divisional heads. What are some of the broader reasons why capital has to be rationed, or why you are forced not to invest your money in a project that you have calculated as giving you the highest return or the highest net present value. There are situations where after you have calculated the NPVs and the IRRs of different projects that you can invest in, you are forced not to be able to invest in the best project. There are several reasons, and I would like to go over a few of them. One of them, as I mentioned, is that the best project may have a very, very high initial investment, and you may not have that money. So you are forced to reject that project as an option. Another reason why you might be forced not to invest in the best project is that you yourself, or if you have a company, do not have the human resources or the knowledge or the talent base required to undertake that project. Again, the project may be very attractive based on NPV, but practically, if you can't manage and operate and understand the business, then you're forced to reject it. A third reason why oftentimes companies choose not to invest in a project, even though they have the option of borrowing money from a bank or from a financial institution, is that there is a prevailing fear of debt. In the case of Muslim countries, there is also the issue of riba, and that is a major reason why Muslim investors and companies choose not to borrow money. As I have mentioned earlier at the beginning of this course, there should be no doubt that according to Sharia, riba is absolutely forbidden. Now, keeping this in mind, you will see that in many Muslim countries, capital rationing has an ethical basis attached to it. You will find investors in various parts of the Muslim Ummah investing in equity-based companies and equity-based investments where there is a risk of profit and loss. So we will talk more about this when we discuss equities and other financial instruments. But for now, it's important to keep in mind that companies have various constraints that keep them or prevent them from investing in the best project. As I mentioned, there is a fear of debt, and that fear is justified because when we talk about risk later on, you will find out that when a company takes on debt, its future cash flows become more risky, and therefore there is a possibility of default or the company going bankrupt, and there is a general fear, therefore, to avoid taking on debt. These are various reasons why companies choose not to invest in the best possible project based on NPV, and therefore this is a capital rationing process. Now, instead of discussing these concepts just verbally, let's take a look at a numerical example and see how practically you can implement the capital rationing decision making. We will take a look at a case where there are four different projects that you can pick from. These four projects each have a different initial investment or outlay. They each have different net present values and IRRs attached to them. And rather than start off with the cash flow diagrams of each one of these projects, which we could have, I've simply given you the data in very, very brief form. If you take a look at the slide, you will see that the data has been tabulated for each project. Project A has an initial investment of 200, an IRR of 40%, and an NPV of 300 rupees. Project B has an initial investment of 100 rupees, an IRR of 40%, and an NPV of 300 rupees. Project C has an initial investment of 300, an IRR of 35%, and an NPV of 200. And finally, Project D has the highest initial investment of 800 rupees, the lowest IRR, 30%, and the highest NPV of 600. Now, the question is that if the total amount of funds that you have available for investment are 1,000 rupees, then which of these projects should you invest your money in? Obviously, we cannot invest the money in all four projects. All of these four projects have positive NPVs, and ideally, if we invest in all of them, we should maximize the value that we are bringing into the company and thereby maximize the wealth of the shareholders. But we cannot do that. Why? Because we only have 1,000 rupees to spend or to invest. And the total amount of investments that would be required if we invested in all of these projects would be 1,400 rupees. So clearly, we have to go through a capital rationing process and choose a few amongst these four different projects. We have a few options. One option is to invest in the first three projects, projects A, B, and C. Now, if we invest in these three projects, then we need to ask ourselves, what will be the combined NPV of these projects? We need to ask ourselves what the average IRR will be for this particular portfolio or combination of projects. And finally, we should also take a look at a third and interesting parameter for capital rationing, which is what percentage of the total budget available is being utilized or spent if we invest in these projects. So, quite simply, the combined NPV of these three projects will add up to 800 rupees, 300 plus 300 plus 200. The average IRR, a simple average, not a weighted average based on the investment side, a simple average of the different IRRs would come to 38% if you add up 40% plus 40% plus 35% divide by 3, you would come up with approximately 38%. So 38% seems like a relatively attractive IRR. NPV of 800 rupees looks quite good relative to the size of the investments. And finally, the interesting parameter as far as capital rationing goes that we need to take a look at is percent budget utilization. And for this option, which is investment in projects A, B, and C, the total amount that we would invest adds up to 600 rupees, 200 plus 100 plus 300 for each of the three projects. This 600 rupees means that out of the 1,000 rupees that you have available to spend, you are availing only 60% of the budget. So now let's take a look at these same parameters for some other options of portfolios for investment. So now let's take a look at another portfolio of projects. Another option we have is to invest in projects A and D. If we calculate the net present value for these two projects, it will add up to 900 rupees. 300 is the net present value for project A, and 600 is the NPV for project D. That adds up to 900 rupees. And this is higher than the net present value for the previous portfolio that we spoke about in option number one. If we calculate the average IRR for this portfolio, it comes to 35%, which is slightly lower than the average IRR for the previous portfolio. And finally, if we take a look at the budget utilization, then that comes to 1,000 rupees exactly. 200 rupees is the investment for project A, and 800 rupees is the investment for project D, and that adds up to 1,000. So, in this particular option, we are utilizing 100% of the budget. We have a third option that we can take a look at, and that is the investment in projects B and D. The NPV for this portfolio comes to 900 rupees, 300 rupees for project B, and 900 rupees is the NPV for project D. So that adds up to 900 rupees, which is identical to option number two that we just spoke about. The average IRR for this portfolio is 35%. That is a simple average. And finally, the budget utilization for this portfolio is initial investment of 100 for project B plus initial investment of 800 rupees for project D, adding up to a total of 900 rupees. So in this particular option, we are utilizing 900 divided by 1,000, which is 90% of the total budget. Now, let's take a look at our conclusions in summary form. If we take a look at that table, then we can see very clearly that the best option is option number two. Why is that? Because it carries the highest NPV, which is 900 rupees, and it also carries the highest budget utilization. 100% of the budget or the money that you have available is being invested. And at what rate of return? At roughly 35% IRR. Now, you can ask yourself, why don't we go for option number one? Option number one has the highest IRR, an average IRR of 38%. The problem is that in option number one, our NPV is not the highest. It is lower than option number two and option number three. And secondly, and very importantly, the percent of the budget that is utilized in option number one is only 60%. 40% of the money that you have available to invest is wasted and is lying idle. What will you do with this money? Where will you invest it? This is a problem. Idle money sitting in the company has to earn some kind of return, and if you don't have an attractive project available, then you might be forced to place that money in a bank account that will only yield 9 or 10% per annum. So, percent of the budget that is utilized by a particular portfolio of investments is very important. It should be as high as possible and as close to 100% as possible. So, in conclusion, we've decided that based on the criteria of NPV and percent budget utilization, which are the two most important ones for capital rationing, that option number two, which is a portfolio of project A and project D, is the best combination of projects to invest in. So the next thing we'd like to do is to take a look at three broad kinds of problem areas that you can run into during the capital rationing and decision-making process. یہ تین پیچیدہ ایریاز کیا ہیں؟ ایک تو ڈفرنس ان ٹائمنگ آف دا کیش فلوز بٹوین ڈفرنٹ پروجیکٹس، دوسرا ڈفرنس ان دی سائز اور دی کوانٹٹی اور ویلیو آف دا کیش فلوز امنگسٹ ڈفرنٹ پروجیکٹس، اینڈ تھرڈلی ڈفرنس ان دی لائف اسپین آف دا ڈفرنٹ پروجیکٹس. We've already talked a little bit about how to handle projects with different lifespans using the Common Life and EAA approach. So let's talk about the problem of comparing projects with different sizes or quantums of cash flow. In other words, here we are taking a look at comparing projects, one of which has small cash flows taking place regularly, perhaps over a period of time, and another project that has very, very large cash flows in comparison taking place perhaps at a different point in time. So let's take a look at the kind of situation that we need to address. There's an issue over here. The first and most important issue is that if the two projects have different amounts of investments that are taking place, investments are also cash flows, then what do you do with the project that has a very small investment and that leaves a large amount of money uninvested? For projects that have small investments, the budget utilization is quite small. And the big problem for management then is, what do you do with the spare money? Where do you invest it? How do you get a high rate of return on it? Let's take a look at a numerical example. In this particular example, our budget size, let's say, is 1500 rupees. We'll take a look at two projects. One of the projects, Project A, has a cash flow pattern as follows. Project A has an initial investment of 200 rupees, a net positive cash flow of 300 rupees in year 1, and the life of this project is only 1 year. If you calculate the NPV at a required rate of return of 10%, it comes out to be 73 rupees. And if you calculate the IRR, that comes out to 50%. And I have not shown the calculations in detail this time on the slides, but I would urge you to complete the calculations on your own and verify the answers. Project B has the following cash flows. Initial investment of 1,500 rupees. That is a cash outflow, so it should carry a negative sign. Then it has a net positive cash inflow of 1,900 rupees, which you can show by means of an upward-pointing arrow. And if you calculate the NPV of Project B, that comes out to be positive 227 rupees at a required rate of return of 10%, and the IRR for Project B comes out to be 27%. Now, if we compare these two projects, you will see that Project B has a lower IRR than Project A. So, would it be enough to reject Project B because it has a lower IRR? No. Our criteria, let me repeat, is net present value. And Project B has a higher net present value. Therefore, you should choose Project B, even though it has a lower IRR. Net present value has a direct connection with shareholder wealth. IRR necessarily does not. In this particular example that I just talked about, the IRR of Project B is lower Why? Because in this particular case, you are receiving the cash flow or the large cash flow at a later point in time. So in other words, you've got a cash flow of 1900 rupees taking place in year one. Whereas in the case of Project A, there was a much smaller cash flow taking place in the future, and therefore its return, annualized return, was a lot larger. Now, let's take a look at the second area, second problematic area for capital rationing, and that is one of timing differences. A good project, as I mentioned, might suffer from a low IRR, even though its net present value is higher. But that doesn't mean that a project should be rejected because it's got a lower IRR. As I mentioned, the reason for that can be that the particular project is receiving large amounts of cash flows later in time. And for that reason, its internal rate of return might appear to be lower than another project that receives cash inflows a lot earlier. Let's take a look at a numerical example. In this particular example, the budget that we have is 2,500 rupees. The cash flows for Project A are as follows. Initial investment of 1,000 rupees and a net positive cash flow of 100 rupees at the end of year 1 and a net positive cash flow of 200 rupees at the end of year 2. And finally, a net positive cash flow of 2,000 rupees at the end of year 3. So you can see that in the case of Project A, there is a large cash flow, 2,000 rupees, taking place quite late in time on the third year. If you calculate the NPV at a required rate of return, I, of 10%, then the NPV comes out to be positive 758 rupees. If you calculate the IRR for Project A, that comes out to be 35%. Now let's talk about Project B and compare that. The cash flows of Project B are as follows. Initial investment of 1,000 rupees, same as Project A, followed by a net positive cash flow in year 1 of 650 rupees, followed by another net positive cash flow of 650 rupees in year 2, and finally followed by a net positive cash flow of 650 rupees at the end of year 3. So, Project B is then more or less like an annuity that gives you a positive cash flow of 650 rupees starting year 1 and going up to year 3, whereas Project A has a very uneven cash flow, whereby in the last year, year 3, it has a net cash inflow of 2,000 rupees. If you calculate the NPVs and IRRs, you would find that the IRR for Project A is lower. And it is lower because Project A is receiving a very high cash flow in the third year, which is very late, as opposed to Project B that is receiving a steady cash inflow of 650 rupees every year. However, the net present value of Project A is higher, and therefore we will pick Project A to invest in. The final problem area that we'll talk about for capital rationing is one that we have discussed partly already when we were talking about capital budgeting without constraints, and that is one of comparing projects that have different lifespans. Jaise ki maine pehle arz kiya, jab aap farak projects ko compare kar rahe hain jinki lifespan farak hai, to aapko un sare projects ko ek hi common lifespan pe lana hoga. Sabse pehla step ye hai. Again, if we're talking about projects, for example, one project having a lifespan of 2 years and another project with a lifespan of 3 years, then the least common multiple of 2 and 3 is 6 years. And you would have to replicate the cash flows of each project over a 6-year period. Then you would compute the net present value for each project over the 6-year period and find out which project has the higher NPV. We have got this approach, which is known as the common life approach, and a second approach that is known as the equivalent annual annuity method. And you can use either one of these approaches to handle the problem of projects with different lifespans. Also, as I mentioned, there are different advantages and disadvantages associated with whether a project has a very long or a very short life. If a project has a very long life, then you are likely to miss out on the opportunities to invest in new equipment and state-of-the-art high-tech equipment often enough. So you will miss out on the ability to change your assets and improve their quality that can give your business a competing edge. By the same token, the problem with projects with very, very short lifespans is that, of course, they will give you a return quickly, but then what will you do with your money after the project's life has ended? Where will you invest the money? Do you have another project that you can invest the money in? If you don't, then you might be forced to place your money in a bank account that yields a very low rate of return or a low markup. So, with this, I wrap up the new material for this particular lecture as far as capital rationing goes. Capital rationing gives us a practical angle on capital budgeting, because its starting point is that the amount of funds or money you have available to spend is limited. Now, let me wrap up the material for this particular lecture. We mentioned that capital rationing is a very practical process whereby you are forced to limit the investment that you can make based on the amount of money that you have available. The scarcity of financial resources and the scarcity of human resources and talent limits the kind of projects that you can invest in. For example, you cannot invest in high-tech projects if you don't have a team of capable engineers and researchers. So these are constraints that you have to live with in the real world when you are going through the capital budgeting process. We studied an example for capital rationing whereby we compared 4 different projects, and we mentioned that for capital rationing, the most important factors are firstly NPV and secondly percent budget utilization, followed thirdly by IRR. But IRR is not quite as important because it's very sensitive to the timing of the cash flows. Just because a good project may have large cash flows taking place late in time, it might suffer from a low IRR, even though it has a very high NPV. So you should focus on the net present value as the first and foremost criteria, and then you should also pay attention to the percent of the budget that is utilized, because it doesn't help for you not to invest available money. Money that is sitting idle is not earning any return, or it is earning a minimal return. So these are some of the issues that you need to consider in capital rationing, and we've also gone through some quantitative techniques that will allow you to compare and to rank different projects. With this, I would like to close this lecture on capital rationing. Aapko Ministry of Science and Technology Pakistan, Virtual University aur Mubashir Humayun ki taraf se bahut bahut shukriya. خدا حافظ اور السلام علیکم.